Like to call the September 30th, 2021, 10 a.m. post-council meeting to order. For the record, we're meeting at the Public Safety and Education and Training Center located at 410 West, 9800 South on the third floor of the post-council room. As a matter of business, we would like to recognize those who are attending virtually, Sheriff Cameron Noel, Bruce Bailey, and Janetta Williams. With that, we'll go ahead and ask if you had a chance to read the approve the June 22nd, 2021 minutes. And if so, do I have a motion to approve?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
So moved by Spence Austin. Do I have a second? Second from Chief Self. Any further discussion or questions? Hearing none, the motion passes. We'll go ahead and move to quarterly reports with Lieutenant Jacqueline Moore and Director Scott Stevenson.
So for the quarter of June 1st to August 31st, 2021, post investigations received 70 complaints. We opened 26 investigations. We conducted 2 administrative hearings. We closed 4 investigations with no action, and we received 6 voluntary relinquishments. The first was for theft. The second was for entice a minor by internet or text, sexual battery, assault, and criminal mischief. The third was for assault and domestic violence. The fourth was enticing a minor by internet. The fifth was sexual conduct on duty. And the sixth was willful falsification to obtain certification and lie under Garrity. We reviewed 301 basic training applications, 20 dispatcher applications, 26 waiver reactivation applications. We currently have 76 open cases and 48 are active. Any questions on those? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, Council. I'm representing Captain Alex Garcia, who is trying to harvest a deer up in your neck of the woods. Chair. Yeah. And Lieutenant Newland is in Hawaii. Expects us to feel bad for him that he has to miss this meeting. All right. These are some statistics for basic training. We've had quite a few classes. 355, which is Leo block, that was from April 26th to June 29th, started Leo with 35, 33 completed, with 2 departing for the following reason: 1 dismissed for medical, not academy related, and then a cancel enrollment by cadet decision. Next class, we had 22 start, 20 complete, 2 departed, 1 for dismissal for medical issue, not academy related, meaning we didn't break them in DT or PT. Another dismissal for skills, so they just couldn't pass a portion of the curriculum. Next class, 357. Started with 13, ended with 11, and again, this is an SFO block. 2 departed, 2 dismissed from the academy for failing the certification exam. 357 is a Leo. Started with 27, 22 completed. 1 departed for the following reason. Skills, physical fitness, so they couldn't complete portion of the curriculum. And then 4 incomplete, waiting to retest. 358. Is an SFO, started with 16, 15 completed, 1 just canceled enrollment and withdrew. And 358 started with, this is a Leo block, 26 passed, cadet self-departed. 359 started SFO with 13 completed. 359 Leo, 26 and 26 enrolled, so they completed. It's a good group. And then 360, SFO started with 35, 34 did not complete. The applicant did not complete the waiver process. Upcoming basic training academies, we have 360 Leo, which starts October 12th, goes through December 16th. We have 43 enrolled at the moment. 361 SFO will start November 8th. That's the additional class we've added this year just due to demand. That will end December 17th. 16 are enrolled. So we still have plenty of room for that class. And in service from June 2021 to August 31st, we offered 45 in-service classes, graduating 634 officers after enrolling 741, 19 dispatchers for a total of 560 hours of training offered. And there's several different types of classes that we offered. I don't want to read every one of them. We also successfully concluded our audit for in-service training hours. 17 officers were found deficient, and those names will most likely be reported to the Utah retirement system.
Thanks, Director.
Yep.
We'll now turn the time over to Marcus Yockey for Special Functions Officer, Law Enforcement Officer conversation.
So just some quick updates on the curriculum. So in regards to the SFO block, we removed community relations, which was a five-hour course. The reason we removed it is it used a lot of older terminology, and we identified that many of the course objectives and information is now being is now contained in what we call our core competency courses. That's includes bias-free policing, serving diverse communities, and procedural justice 1 and 2. So we got rid of that. We added our human trafficking course. That was mandated by House Bill 291 in 2020, and it revised Utah Code 765608. It requires the Office of the Attorney General to develop and offer training to law enforcement officers. We started offering that beginning July 1st of 2021. So that's our human trafficking course. We think it's going really well. Let me know if you have any questions on that. The next course that we are seeking to add, we're hoping to add, is fingerprinting. This is a two-hour course taught by BCI. The reason they want to teach this class is to improve fingerprinting and criminal history. So they received grant funding from the FBI in order to allow this training to be conducted. This isn't fingerprinting of officers. It's to teach officers to improve their fingerprinting of subjects. It teaches how to properly print, recognize errors, and how to fix those errors. Satellite academies may contact BCI for additional information on this course. So that's the course they're hoping to teach. We had a few updates in the SFO block. We updated leadership and professionalism. That's an ethics course. We will be changing it to emotional intelligence. Leadership and professionalism. We feel that emotional intelligence is starting to lead. We need our cadets to be more emotionally intelligent and understand the concepts and principles of that. And so we think that's going to be a good direction. And then we also updated our laws of reasonable force curriculum. We updated case law and objectives in regards to that to make sure we're up to speed on that. Regarding the LEO block, we added the Understanding Autism course. This is in response to House Bill 162, 2021, and House Bill 334, 221, which requires officers to obtain annual training on intervention with mental health, autism spectrum disorder, and other neurological or development disorders. While it's not required, those bills do not require it to be as part of the academy. The post director felt, Director Stevenson thought it would be best to add this in our LEO block, and we think it's best in the LEO block, not for SFO block, because it is more related to the patrol functions as far as encountering individuals with that are on the autism spectrum. We also added community-oriented policing. This was actually a revision from our community relations class from the SFO block. We shifted it over to the LEO block. It's a two-hour course, so it updates the community relations course. And it now serves as a bridge between the core competency courses, our implicit bias course, and our serving diverse communities courses with our procedural justice and police legitimacy course. So it's a good transition. It helps officers understand that we need to get the community involved and how we can do that. Lastly, we removed our identity theft course, which was a two-hour course. The reason we removed it is objectives were already being covered in a few of our law courses. And so we removed the course for redundancy. The last thing we have is our DT 16 hours that were approved at the end of last year by the council. We are finalizing it, and we will have that up and running. So we've been training on these new hours and working on the objectives, and that will be ready for implementation on January 1st for all the satellites on January 1st, 2022. Any questions, concerns?
I'd just like to mention how much we appreciate your taking a look at the redesign, trying to tackle the challenges of the legislative session to add and implement these new training curriculums. Obviously, you've done a fantastic job. I know this is a huge challenge, so thank you.
Thank you, Chief.
Next, we'll go ahead look at disciplinary cases. Renee, do you want to take the lead here?
Thomas Barcinas.
I don't see any council rising.
He's not in the hallway.
He's not here, so let's go ahead and proceed.
The agency involved is Salt Lake County Sheriff's Office. The offense is driving under the influence of alcohol, drugs, or a combination of both. It's a Category D offense. Post recommendation is a 2-year suspension. The adjudication status is a waiver. He's on paid admin leave since March 23rd, 2021, still employed. The aggravators are triple the legal limit. Thomas Barcinas was investigated by a local police agency for driving under the influence of alcohol, drugs, or a combination of both, DUI. The investigation disclosed Barcinas went to multiple bars with friends and consumed multiple shots of liquor and multiple bottles of beer. Barcinas drove to a local restaurant and ordered food through the drive-thru. The restaurant worker contacted the local police agency. The local police agency located Barcinas in his vehicle in the parking lot of the restaurant. Barcinas admitted to the local agency that he had consumed too much alcohol that night. Barcinas failed the standardized field sobriety test. He was arrested and a warrant obtained to get a blood alcohol sample. The results showed Barcinas had a blood alcohol content of 0.18. On March 22nd, 2021, the case was screened with the city attorney and charges were filed on Barcinas for DUI. The charges are currently pending in the court system. During Garrity interviews with his agency and post, Barcinas admitted to drinking multiple shots of liquor and multiple bottles of beer and then driving to a restaurant. Barcinas admitted that he was not safe to operate a motor vehicle. On August 27th, 2021, Thomas Barcinas waived his right to a hearing before an administrative law judge and stipulated to the facts as contained in the notice of agency action.
Any questions for counsel?
Road deputy, is he in corrections?
He's a corrections officer for Salt Lake County.
And he's still on paid
administrative leave? Sergeant Barnett, the post. They had him on administrative leave. Last I heard, I tried contacting him this week. He didn't respond, but he told me in the interview they were waiting for post to finish their case on.
Hearing that, do we have a motion?
Motion.
I'll make a motion to accept post recommendation for a 2-year suspension for Thomas Barcinas.
I have a motion from Chief Silk to accept post recommendation.
I'll second it.
I have a second from John Crowley. Do I have any other discussion? Hearing that, I'll go ahead and call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? The motion carries.
Michael Castro.
Mr. Castro, are you here, or do you have counsel present?
Michael Castro.
Doesn't appear that he's here for the
does not appear that he's here.
For the record. Let's go ahead and proceed.
The agency involved is Mantua Police Department. The offense is disorderly conduct, a Category F. Post recommendation is 3 months suspension. He submitted a waiver. He was terminated March 26, 2021. Michael Castro was investigated by Post for disorderly conduct and other allegations. The Post investigation discovered Castro, then the chief of Mantua Police Department, met with the mayor of Mantua and a town councilwoman concerning administrative and disciplinary issues. During the meeting, Castro was disciplined for administrative issues. At several points throughout the meeting, town employees heard Castro yelling at the mayor and the town councilwoman and were alarmed by his tumultuous behavior. The mayor said he was intimidated by Castro's behavior and was concerned about a physical altercation. The councilwoman said she thought Castro wanted her to feel threatened. Castro participated in a Garrity interview with Post. He told the mayor firing him was a huge mistake and it would bite the mayor in the ass. Castro waived his right to a hearing before an administrative law judge and stipulated to the facts as contained in the notice of agency action.
Any questions for counsel? Hearing none, I'll go ahead and call for a motion.
Question, since this happened in March, if we do 3 months, then the suspension is effectively over as soon as we do it. Is that right?
Correct. Yeah. Okay. He's no longer employed.
Is that a motion?
No.
Okay.
Do I have a motion?
Motion to accept.
I have a motion to accept by Chief Swanson. Do I have a second?
Second.
Second. Bailey, second.
Second from Colonel Rappage. Sorry about that. Do I have any further discussion? Hearing none, I'll go ahead and call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion passes. Thank you. Next.
Taylor Dean.
Mr. Dean, are you here or do you have counsel present? We check in the hall. I see no one rising. Go ahead and proceed.
Mr. Dean is not currently employed. The offense is willfully falsifies any information to obtain certification, a Category C. Post recommendation is a 2-year suspension, and Mr. Dean submitted a waiver, and that's not applicable since he's not employed. Aggravators, multiple lies. The post application, ethics class, the memo, and separate interviews. Taylor Dean was investigated for willfully falsifying his post application for certification. On his application, Dean documented he was convicted of a sex offense as a juvenile. Dean wrote that he was 11 when he had a young child inappropriately touch him and vice versa. Dean did not disclose any other sex offenses. Dean applied to be a police officer for a city agency. During an interview with a background investigator, Dean said his first offense involved a 4-year-old child kissing around the area of his penis. He also disclosed a second sex offense he committed after the first offense. Dean told his 5-year-old niece that he had a mouse in his pocket, and he allowed his niece to put her hand in his pocket. She touched his penis. The background investigator forwarded this information to Post. Dean participated in a Garrity interview with Post. Dean said his first offense involved a child kissing the base of his penis 3 to 5 times. He wrote touched on his Post application to encompass a broad range of activities. Dean said he did not disclose the second offense on his Post application because it was not a big deal. He also said he did not think about it. He said he disclosed the offense to the background investigator because he thought she may have already known about it. Dean waived his right to a hearing before the administrative law judge and stipulated to the facts as contained in the notice of agency action.
Any questions for counsel? Mayor Walker?
Go ahead, sir. So this Post application, the original one, you don't get to amend it, or is that?
You get a chance to amend it. We teach a class, Ethics 1050, that goes over the application in detail, what is required to be reported. And then they, if they have an addendum, they attach a statement to that addendum, and then we go over it. If it was conduct that would have precluded them, then we would have, they would be dismissed from the academy. But if we don't get an addendum, they check the box, no, there's nothing else to report.
So if they made this, if they thought of something in the ethics class, they could put it on the form. If there wasn't a disqualifying thing, that would constitute the original form then?
Yes.
Am I getting that right?
Yes.
Any further questions? Hearing none, I'll go ahead and call for a motion. I have a motion to accept from Colonel Rappage. Do I have a second? Second from Mayor Walker. Any further discussion? Hearing none, I'm going to go ahead and call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Ms. Williams, did you have a question? Oh, sorry, you were muted. I apologize. Thank you, ma'am. Motion passes. Thank you. Next.
Kason Gubler.
Oh, let's change the order of that. Oh, yes, sorry, you're right. I apologize, counsel. You're correct. For the record, Kason's here with his counsel. We'll go ahead. Ms. Spooner, do you want to go with the facts?
The agency involved is APMP. The offense is communications fraud, falsification of a government document, Category D. Post recommendation is a 2.5-year suspension, and we had a stipulated agreement, and Mr. Gubler is still employed. Aggravators are their multiple charges. In 2019, while working for adult probation and parole, Kason Gubler applied for employment with a local county sheriff's office. During the background process, Gubler disclosed criminal conduct that occurred prior to and after becoming certified as a peace officer in 2013. Documentation was forwarded to Post, and Post concluded that Gubler had violated Section 53-6-211D on multiple instances. Gubler took a Schedule II pain medication prescribed to his wife multiple times between 2013 to 2015. Gubler documented a receipt to obtain a rebate he was not entitled to receive. In 2007 and again in 2015, Gubler switched price tags to pay less than the retail value marked price. On August 8, 2012, Gubler failed to disclose the theft from 2007 on his Post application. Gubler refused to participate in the Post investigation. on August 2nd, 2021, a stipulation and settlement agreement was reached with Kason Gubler, in which Mr. Gubler admitted to count two of the Notice of Agency Action, communications fraud, as provided in Utah Code Section 76-10-1801-1, a Class B misdemeanor, and count four, willfully falsifying information as provided in Utah Code Section 53-6-211-1A. Counts one and three were dismissed with prejudice. On August 3rd, 2021, a copy of the stipulation was provided to the administrative law judge.
Counsel.
Members of the council, my name is Rich Willie. I represent Kason Gubler today. And I just want to go over a few things, and then I want to give my client an opportunity to address the council. And I, after that, I'd like to discuss some comparable discipline and make a request for discipline. So. So a couple things in this case, as stipulated before, that we stipulated that counts two and four, count two being a communications fraud, and count four is willfully falsifying information on to obtain certification. So I just want to give a little bit of background on the communication fraud. So the factual background on that. Was in May 2015, my client purchased a Burris Optics scope. 2 weeks later, the store offered a $100 money back rebate if you provided your receipt. He made modifications to the receipt and sent it to the retailer to fall within the rebate period, And so a couple things I want to point out on this. So the one of the original I believe that one of the original charges was theft on this. So what I want to point out on this is that the desire and the intent of my client in doing this was not necessarily illegal, because this he could have achieved this through completely legal means, and that's by returning the optics to the store within the 30-day return period and then purchasing it again. So what he wanted to achieve was not necessarily illegal, and there is certainly legal means to do that. So that's one of the things I want to point out here, because in a lot of these, the intent and objective is just inherently illegal, and here it wasn't. It was a poor decision, and it was is more of a process error than it was the underlying act being illegal. And then the other thing I want to point out is that he did not complete the act. He did not, and the retailer did not suffer any loss from this. Second thing, on willfully falsifying information to obtain certification. So this really comes down to I feel how questions in the post application were asked at this point in time. I believe the question that would encompass this behavior is, have you ever been involved in a crime of dishonesty? So what I want to kind of drive home in this is, people coming into post, they typically don't have a legal background. They don't have the same experience that a lot of the people do here. And so questions like this have a certain meaning to people in this room that they wouldn't necessarily have to a person coming in and off the street. And the reason I feel this is true is because the application that he made to his agency, shortly afterwards, and that's the Hurricane Police Department, he did fully disclose this because the questions were asked a little bit differently. And they were specifically asking about tag switching and things like that. So So the questions in here may not have triggered in his mind that is something that needed to be disclosed, whereas the more in-depth questions that specifically asked about these sorts of things did trigger in his mind that it needed to be disclosed on the second application. So with that, I'd like to give my client just a couple minutes to address the council.
I would just like to make one comment.
Go
here.
Ahead, Ms. Spooner.
The ethics class.
You need to go to the microphone.
Okay. The ethics class describes what a crime of dishonesty is, so they are informed what it is. They know what it is. So, I just wanted to make sure that point is clarified.
And also to that point, this would have occurred in 2012. So, and. You know, I think that was before Ms. Spooner's time at Post by several years. Perhaps that practice has always been in place, but I don't know how Post was trained back then.
Do we know the day when that course was created?
The date is 2010. So, he had that information.
So I prepared this for today's meeting, and I'm just going to read it that way. I feel like I convey what I was trying to convey and that I didn't forget anything. I appreciate the opportunity today to speak to everyone directly. I want to thank each of you for being here and for your service to the state of Utah. I understand each of you have a job to do, and the Post Council consistently strives to balance compassion for the individual officer with the duty to protect the law enforcement profession and the public's trust. I support the decision the Council decides on my behalf today. As a police officer, our integrity is paramount and what we rely upon every day. I am not perfect, but I strive to be better every day. I have made mistakes that have impacted not only myself, but also my family. Have made decisions based upon emotion rather than what I know to be right and wrong. I have learned from those mistakes and have moved forward. Since the beginning of this process, I have learned a lot. The possibility of losing my career I've worked so very hard for has reaffirmed why integrity is the most important aspect of our career. I have taken the responsibility for my actions, and I understand why I am before you today. When this process first began, my family asked me why I divulged the information and my reserve application to the Washington County Sheriff's Office that had the potential to strip me of my certification and my career. And my answer is because I am honest, and I have always been honest on each application I've ever submitted to the best of my recollection. 4 years ago, I joined adult probation and parole, taking on a different role than traditional law enforcement. I have witnessed a lot of success and satisfaction watching individuals grow, learn their value, and achieve success. Being a probation agent can be challenging with many components. One aspect of supervision I have learned is the scale of judging the individuals with which I'm tasked to supervise, and that's based upon their performance and success versus their mistakes. We must hold our offenders accountable. At times, the offender is working very hard, trying their best. We see their effort and celebrate their win. If a mistake is made, we must decide the punishment and take into account the whole of their success, examining all aspects of their efforts. I am asking you today to look at the whole of my success, the positive impact I have made in the community, as well as my mistakes. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Prior to leaving, just for the record, Corrections Director Nelson is going to recuse himself. Do we have any questions for Mr. Gubler?
I need to recuse.
And also, Sheriff Corey Pulsifer is also going to recuse. Any questions for Mr. Gubler?
Any questions for counsel?
I have just a few more comments, okay. Chairman.
Please.
Okay, so I'd like to discuss the comparable discipline for just a moment here. Okay, so essentially what we're looking at here is a Category C, which has a range of 9 months to 3.5 years, and then a Category D that ranges from 3 months to 2.5 years. So in searching for comparables, finding communications fraud was a little bit difficult because there's just not a lot of those type of cases that come through post that I've got in my records here. But theft, you know, routinely comes up, and wrongful appropriation routinely comes up. So I'd like to, you know, point out a couple of cases here. So in March 2018, Michael Martel was given a letter of caution for wrongful appropriation, and in that case, he took two surplus air conditioning units and filing cabinets from his agency in September 2017. Neil Anderson took two TV sets from the correctional facility where he works and received a 3-month suspension. And then the next one that I want to discuss are the situations where people have willfully falsified a certification, but then reported the things that they are alleged to have falsified on the post application to their employer. So in December 2017, Bridget Whiteman failed to disclose an expunged theft conviction on her post application, but disclosed it to her employer as a part of her pre-employment questionnaire. That she was given a 9-month suspension in that case. In September 2015, Joseph Cote did not disclose drug use, but he admitted it as part of the hiring process, also 9-month suspension. So between the two, what we would request today is a total of a 1-year suspension on this, 9 months for the falsification and 3 months on the communication.
Questions for Mr. Willey?
I'd like to just point out, like the one that we just worked on, Taylor Dean, for willfully falsifying any information to obtain certification, and the post counsel accepted a 2-year suspension. So that's, you know, one count.
Any questions for Ms. Spooner?
On Bridget Whiteman, did you say she got a 9-month suspension?
That's what I've got down in my records here. Do you feel that's incorrect?
Most records that I have indicate she got a 2-year suspension in 2017.
Okay. Yeah, what I've got in my records is 9 months. So. Did you look up both of them?
And the other one was?
Joseph Cote.
2017.
Mm-hmm. So in both these cases, the recommendation was 2 years, but post counsel's actual action, according to my records, is 9 months.
I don't find a Joseph Cote in 2017.
2015. Sorry.
Cote was a 9-month suspension. He was not employed at the time.
So that was validated from your end?
Yeah, Joseph Coe was 9 months.
Okay.
Downward departure from recommendations.
Yeah, so with that, I'd just like to renew our request for 1 year suspension.
I have a motion from Chief Swanson.
Make a motion to go with a 1 year suspension.
I have a motion from Chief Swanson for a 1 year suspension. Do I have a second?
I move, Mr. Chair, we adopt the recommendation.
I have a substitute motion from Spence Austin to adopt the recommendation from Post. Do I have a second?
Second. Bruce Bailey, second.
I've got a second from Bruce Bailey. Any further discussion? Well, with that, I'll go ahead and call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion passes. All right. Thank you, counsel. Do you have a second case from right now?
Yes. Yes, Chairman, I'll be right back in.
Perfect. Thank you.
Quentin Grillon.
Mr. Grillon here is Mr. Willie, you're representing
I'll be
him?
Representing.
Okay. For Mr. Grillon. Is your client here?
No.
Okay, thank you. Go ahead, counsel.
He is not currently employed. The offense is obstruction of justice, a Category B offense. Post recommendation is a 3-year suspension. This matter went to a hearing. He resigned from Murray PD May 10th, 2014, resigned from Provo PD February 27th, 2018. In 2014, Quentin Grillon accompanied his mother to a local justice court because she had been issued a traffic citation. Grillon was dressed in his full department uniform from another jurisdiction and sat next to his mother. Her case was set for an arraignment. After the calendar started, Grillon contacted both witnesses on his mother's case by phone and identified himself as Officer Grillon. Grillon asked the complaining witness if he was going to appear for the trial, which was scheduled that morning. The witness said he never received a subpoena and he could not be ready for court in such a short period of time. Grillon told the witness if he did not appear in the next few minutes, then the judge would dismiss the action. Grillon then approached the prosecutor and told her that he contacted the witnesses and they did not want to testify and did not care if the case was dismissed. Grillon told the prosecutor that the case was frivolous and the case should be dismissed. Based largely upon the false statements provided by Grillon, the prosecutor dismissed Grillon's mother's traffic case. The internal investigation started later that day when the witness contacted the citing law enforcement agency to find out why he did not get a subpoena, because he thought the case should go forward and Grillon's mother deserved the citation. Grillon was criminally investigated and charged with providing false or misleading information, a Class B misdemeanor. The criminal charge against Grillon was later dismissed without prejudice. The internal investigation started by Grillon's department was not completed because Grillon resigned. After resigning from Murray Police Department, Grillon continued to work in law enforcement until February of 2018, when he resigned from a different department. The post investigation started in September of 2019 when Grillon applied to Post to reactivate his certification. In his application, Grillon indicated Post had taken no action in the matter, but it was found that this incident had not been referred to Post for investigation. On March 27, 2021, an administrative hearing on the matter was held before Judge Richard Catton. On June 14, 2021, after hearing the testimony and arguments, as well as reviewing the evidence, Judge Catton made his ruling. Judge Catton determined Grillon violated Utah Code Section 53-6-211-1D by engaging in conduct constituting a state criminal offense, obstruction of justice, Utah Code 76-8-306, a Class A misdemeanor, as alleged in the Notice of Agency Action.
Any questions for counsel? Go ahead, Mr. Willie.
Just for the record, my name is Rich Willie. I'm representing Mr. Grillon today. I mean, Mr. Grillon is not able to attend. He is out of state and has some training he was not able to reschedule. I want to discuss today two broad topic areas. And so the first is going to be a lack of subject matter jurisdiction, which I'd like a ruling on. And then I'd like to discuss mitigating, in the event that Pulse Council determines that it has subject matter jurisdiction, I'd like to discuss mitigating circumstances and comparable discipline. First up is the subject matter jurisdiction. So under 53-6-211, the council has the authority to issue a letter of caution, suspend, or revoke the certification of a peace officer if the peace officer does one of the following things. And a violation of state or federal laws is one of those things. But when we look to the definition of peace officer under 53-1-102, as used in this title, peace officer means any officer certified in accordance with 53 Chapter 13, Peace Officer Classifications, and 53-13-101 says, as used in this chapter, certified means recognized and accepted by the division as having successfully met and maintained the standards and training requirements set and approved by the director of the division with the advice and consent of the council. In this case, in its notice of agency action, Post stated on October 11, 2019, Post investigators reviewed the application for the reactivation of Grillon's peace officer certification and then initiated the action after reviewing that application. But at the time he submitted the application, he was not certified and he is still not certified. So the big question to Post Council is, what are you going to revoke and what are you going to suspend, because he's not a certified officer at this particular moment as stated in the statute. So with that, I would like to move the council to take no action for lack of subject matter jurisdiction and hold the findings of the ALJ as being void ab initio, which is just void from the beginning, since in our position, Pulse Council did not have authority to initiate the investigation.
No.
However, issues of subject matter jurisdiction can be raised at any time, even on appeal.
So the council shall accept the administrative law judge's findings of fact and conclusions of law. So we have to accept that he made a finding whether there and he had jurisdiction for that one.
And that's a position you can take, but I think it's the wrong one.
Thank you.
I would just like to make one comment. The problem was it wasn't reported to Post, but at the time he engaged in that conduct, he was a certified peace officer.
Any additional, Mr. Willie?
With regard to that point, even under, and I'll get into the mitigating circumstances in a moment, but even under today's reporting standards, I believe that a law enforcement agency would have 90 days to report to POST any alleged violation of a law. In this case, the charges were dropped against Mr. Gerlone, and there's good reason for that. So I think even today, had that law enforcement agency been operating under the rules in place today, they still would not have been required to report to POST.
Thank you, Council.
I'd like to make one more comment, Chairperson. If you look at the first findings of fact in the judge's ruling, paragraph one, at all relevant times, Gerlone was a post-certified peace officer employed by the Murray City Police Department.
To that point, Mr. Gerlone was not employed with the Murray City Police Department after 2014. I believe that's also in the findings.
And then I just directed counsel that the statute says termination of a peace officer, whether voluntary or involuntarily, does not preclude suspension or revocation of the certification by the council.
Thank you.
We're going to go ahead with the ruling of the ALJ.
Okay, so we're ruling that there is subject matter jurisdiction, correct?
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, so the next thing I want to discuss is mitigating circumstances. So, I'm just going to go down the line. So this is an event that happened at the time that POST initiated its investigation. It was about 5 years ago. Under the criminal statutes there's a statute of limitations that has long since run. We brought that up with the ALJ, and the ALJ ruled that it was a civil action, and so the criminal statute of limitations didn't apply. So we asked the ALJ to dismiss because it's a civil action, and the civil statute of limitations, it's beyond the civil statute of limitations. In that case, the ALJ still ruled that even though it's a civil action, as stated in the statute, in the POST statute, that civil the civil statute of limitations didn't apply, and we feel that's a mistake. In this case, POST actually brought two different counts, two competing counts against Mr. Gerlone. And in his findings, the ALJ said, in count one of the notice of agency action, POST alleges that Gerlone obstructed justice when he appeared at the justice court in Murray in his PD uniform, contacted the witness in his mother's case, then relayed incorrect information, misleading information to the prosecutor, which resulted in this case. And so there's two competing statutory or two competing statutes here. One's a Class B and one's a Class A misdemeanor. The Class B misdemeanor actually directly addresses this conduct, and that was what he was originally charged under. And it's interesting to note that not only did the prosecutor dismiss that charge against him, but the reason why she did it she wrote a letter to this effect, which was offered during the hearing. She stated, in reviewing the evidence, I concluded Officer Gerlone's action did not violate Utah Code Annotated 768504-6. I do believe that Officer Gerlone made a mistake in deciding to accompany his mother to court while wearing his uniform and in contacting the witness to inquire if he's coming to court on that day. However, I do not believe there is any malice or intent to mislead the prosecutor on the day on the part of Officer Gerlone. In speaking with the prosecutor who is present on that date, she did not believe that Officer Gerlone's actions warranted a conviction or the loss of his job with the Murray Police. She goes on to explain that he was punished far in excess of what she felt the crime was. already at that point. And that was November of 2014. Now, what's important here is she discussed with the prosecutor that he allegedly misled. She discussed this case with her, and at no point during that conversation did that prosecutor say that he misled me. Only what she wrote this letter after having that full conversation with that prosecutor. The trouble of this case is. The prosecutor that he allegedly misled changed her story several times throughout the past several years. And the reason she changed it is because largely in part of because of an interaction she had with one of my coworkers, Nate Nelson. She admitted during the hearing that she was biased against Mr. Grillon, based in part because of the representation that he received from Mr. Nelson. So that's another issue that we have. during the hearing, Sergeant Anthony Karuba originally conducted the investigation against Mr. Grillon for SBI. It was a criminal investigation. At the hearing, we went through Sergeant Karuba's report. We went through all of his evidence. And at the end of the hearing, Sergeant Karuba agreed that Mr. Grillon should not have been charged based on the content of his report. in the hearing, there was a video. There was a video of what actually occurred in the in the courthouse that day. That video we feel had exonerating evidence on it, and particularly we think it would have shown that Mr. Grillon came in after. His mother came in. That evidence is missing. We don't know when or how it went missing, but we firmly established during the case that evidence was missing. It was exculpatory. And again, the ALJ seemed to ignore this fact. So those are some mitigators that and some problems that I have with this case going forward. But I'd like next to discuss some comparables. and so, you know, doing the research on this, I couldn't find anything that matched up exactly with witness tampering or obstruction. You know, this seems to be a somewhat unique situation, but official misconduct for this same similar circumstances comes up. It has come up a couple times. So I'd like you to direct your attention to September 24th, 2014, Tyler Venema received a text from an individual informing him that she was receiving a citation. Tyler sent a text to the officer asking that citation to be dismissed, and it was, and it received a letter of caution. Also 2014, Denise Vincent, also this is official misconduct as well, but same kind of factual similarities as Denise was issuing a citation during which she received a text to basically get rid of the ticket, and she did. She really also received a letter of caution for that behavior. I do have a letter from my client that I'd like to read just a couple things out, and then I'll ask for a for discipline to be imposed. But in the words of my client, he said, "I'd like to address the council and thank everyone for the opportunity to say a few brief words. While serving as a police officer for several departments across Utah, I was able to live my dream of serving others and making a difference in people's lives. I never thought that I would find myself in this position. This event occurred over 7 years ago and has been a heavy burden I've carried for the entire amount of time. It has affected jobs, employment, family life, reputation, and more, including losing a home. I've lost countless hours of sleep, replayed the events in my mind, and questioned everything over and over. I have had years to reflect, better myself as a person and grow. I'm obviously not the person who I was 7 years ago. I was a new officer, and I realized that it was not wise to put myself in that situation. At no point did I ever have any intent to willfully cause any problems or disobey the rules, laws, or policies. I've become wiser, more aware, and devoted myself to living a set of high moral and ethical values. I've learned not to put myself in such situations, and looking back, would never make those decisions again in the future. I maintain that I did not violate any law, and the events that unfolded so many years ago were truly a misunderstanding. I've always had a deep love and appreciation for the profession, even during these tough times. I appreciate your time, and thank you for allowing me to express the opportunity, or allowing me the opportunity to express these thoughts, Quentin Grillone. So with that, having decided that Postal Council has the authority to has subject matter jurisdiction here, what I'd ask for is a letter of caution here, and if there is any suspension imposed, I ask that not exceed the amount of time that he's been out of law enforcement. So February 2018 was the last time he was in law enforcement.
I guess this is for you. Is that the date that we go back to, the date that he last worked, or the date that the investigation started?
Great question.
Well, so did he, what happened with his application to reapplied, he was out of law enforcement and reapplied in 2019?
Yes, he was out for a sufficient amount of time that he needed to reactivate his certification, but not so long as to need to go through the academy again.
And did he disclose this on his application?
Yes.
Does he intend to try to reactivate again, counsel?
I don't know what his intentions are going forward. I'm sorry.
So you said he was out of state training. Is that training in law enforcement?
No.
Dr. Butt?
You know, I need a little clarification too. If the council were to sustain this recommendation, where does that start?
From the date he's out of law enforcement.
So it starts back in 2018.
So it would be over anyway. 2019.
Well, he resigned. He resigned in February of 2018. So I'm assuming he hasn't been a peace officer since that time.
That's correct.
He has not been. 27 of 18, is that correct, counsel?
That's correct. That was the last time he was employed as a law enforcement officer.
All right.
I'm just trying to clarify.
So if you read the notes to the guidelines, it says a disciplinary sanction becomes effective on the date the final order is signed by the post-council chairperson. Absent any extenuating circumstances to the contrary, the officer will receive credit for time served based upon the last date the officer was able to function as a peace officer. So the date of separation means they're no longer able to function as an officer. That was the date. That's the date we go back to.
So
to impose.
Essentially, we're saying 3 years from that date, and so here we are. Okay. Yeah.
Are you saying you have to go back to that date of separation?
Correct.
That's been pressed.
Because he hasn't been a peace officer since that time.
That's correct.
What was the date of separation, 2019?
The last day
that
February 27 of 18 from Provo. We sort of over as soon as we pass it.
Motion to accept.
Second. So we got a motion to accept from Chief Swanson and a second from Spence Austin. Any further discussion? Do you have something in addition? Any further discussion? With that, I'll go ahead and call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion passes. Thank you, Councilor.
Thank you.
Bradley Hobson.
He's not out there. Is Bradley Hodson here?
No, Hobson. He's not outside in the hallway.
For the record, is Mr. Hobson's counsel here? For the record, I see no one rising. Go ahead, counsel, let's proceed.
The agency involved is Washington County Sheriff's Office. The offense is sexual conduct on duty, a Category B offense. Post recommendation is a 3-year suspension, and the adjudication status is default. He did not respond. He was terminated October 14th, 2020. Bradley Hobson was investigated by his agency for sexual conduct on duty. The investigation disclosed Hobson ran with a coworker on several occasions while on duty and being compensated. And on at least one occasion, Hobson and the coworker stopped running and started kissing. He also touched her breasts and vagina over the clothing. Hobson was terminated and no criminal charges were filed. During a Garrity interview with his agency, Hobson admitted that while he was kissing his coworker, he touched her vagina and breasts over her clothing. Hobson admitted his coworker touched his penis over his clothing. Hobson refused to participate in the post-investigation. Hobson failed to respond to the notice of agency action on September 14, 2021. An order of default was signed by the administrative law judge and mailed to Hobson.
For the record, we'll show that Sheriff Corey Pulsifer is recusing himself. Any questions for counsel? Hearing none, I'll go ahead and ask.
There's no question for counsel. Do I have a motion?
I'll make the motion to accept the post-counsel
recommendation. I have a motion from Sheriff Curtis to accept the post-counsel's recommendation.
Second.
I have a second from Mayor Walker. Any further discussion? Hearing none, I'll go ahead and call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion passes.
Dusty Hunt.
Is Dusty Hunt or his counsel here?
No one's in the hallway, Your Honor.
For the record, I see no one rising. Counsel, go ahead and proceed.
The agency involved is the Department of Corrections. The offenses are items prohibited in a correctional facility, open container, categories A and B. Post recommendation is a 4-year suspension, and Mr. Hunt waived his right to a hearing. Agency action was 40 hours without pay, and he's still employed. Aggravators are multiple charges. On September 3rd, 2021, Dusty Hunt, a corrections officer with the Utah Department of Corrections, was investigated by his agency for sleeping on duty. During the investigation, supervisors located a firearm and an open bottle of liquor inside Hunt's vehicle. The vehicle was parked inside a secure area of the correctional facility. Hunt did not have permission from the authority operating the correctional facility to possess the prohibited items. The internal administrative investigation sustained multiple criminal and policy violations. Hunt received 40 hours without pay and retained his employment. A criminal investigation was conducted by UDC Law Enforcement Bureau. Charges were screened, but the county attorney's office declined to file any charges. During a Garrity interview with Post, Hunt said he started carrying the 38 caliber in the center of the console of his vehicle in July, and it's always been there. Hunt said he put liquor in the center console of his car in July and would mix a little with coffee every other week when he went to check on trail cameras. Hunt said he never took the bottle out of his car. On June 24th, 2021, Dusty waived his right to a hearing before an administrative law judge and stipulated to the facts as contained in the notice of agency action.
For the record, Director Nelson will recuse himself on this case. Any questions for counsel? Hearing none, I'll go ahead and call for a motion.
Motion to accept.
I have a motion to accept from Sheriff Pulsifer. Do I have a second?
Second.
Secretary
Chief.
Who was the second online? Bruce Bailey. I got a second from Bruce Bailey. Any further discussion? Hearing none, I'll go ahead and call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion passes.
Robert Kelly.
Robert Kelly, are you here, or do you have, Mr. Kelly, he's got his counsel present as well. Go ahead, counsel, if you want to proceed.
The agency involved is Springville Police Department. The offense is domestic violence, assault, and firearms restriction, a Category A offense. Post recommendation is revocation. He defaulted in the administrative hearing process. He was terminated October 7th, 2019. On September 14th, 2019, Robert Kelly engaged in an argument with his former romantic partner while at his residence. It was initially reported that Kelly wrapped his arms around his former partner during the argument. They lost balance, and his former partner fell backwards onto a coffee table before landing on the floor. Kelly's former partner sustained an injury to one of her ribs. Several days later, Kelly's former partner told an investigator with a local police agency an argument occurred while at Kelly's residence. The argument escalated into a physical altercation. Kelly's former partner claimed Kelly pulled her to the ground by the hair at one point, then kicked her. On October 9th, 2019, a district attorney filed charges on Kelly for domestic violence assault, domestic violence in presence of a child, and obstruction of justice. On May 18, 2021, Kelly pled guilty to one count of domestic violence assault under Utah Code Section 76-5-102-1B, a Class A misdemeanor. This charge stemmed from the incident on September 14, 2019. The charge was to be held in abeyance and was part of a plea bargain. The additional charge of domestic violence assault from 2018 and the charges of domestic violence in the presence of a child and obstruction of justice from 2019 were dismissed with prejudice. On May 21st, 2021, Kelly signed an acknowledgement of firearm restriction form with the court. On December 16th, 2020, Kelly participated in a Garrity interview with Post. He denied the allegations against him. He said he restrained his former partner to prevent her from damaging his property. He said they both fell while he restrained her and she partially landed on a coffee table before completely falling to the floor. Kelly said his former partner fabricated the details of the incident and did not want to report them until he told her he did not want to be in a relationship with her. Post attempted to contact Kelly's former partner by phone. She did not respond. Kelly failed to respond to the notice of agency action. On August 2nd, 2021, an order of default was signed by the administrative law judge and mailed to Kelly.
Counsel.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Good morning. Nathan Evershed with my client, Robert Adam Kelly. What I'd like to do is to tell you a little bit about him. He spent 13 years in the Army National Guard, two combat employments, two domestic deployments. He's received a Purple Heart.
He actually received in 2014 the Soldier's Medal, which is the highest non-combat valor medal for the military, as he pulled three people from a burning plane in West Jordan. Who you have here today is someone of substance and someone of character. He was in law enforcement for 3.5 years. And in my experience, I think one of the saddest things that I've seen in my history of dealing with criminal law. What happened here was that my client dated a woman. I won't give her last name, but her first name is Tracy. She became pregnant, and that relationship lasted longer than it should have, but they broke up in 2019. She came over unannounced on a Saturday, September 14th, 2019. I think that's an important date to remember. There was a verbal argument. She was not expected to come over. He didn't want her there. Based off of her relationship with my client, he actually had a code, 911, that he would send to a friend saying, I need help, I need assistance, and that's what he did that night. And he left home, leaving her in the home. When he got back, he found out and discovered that she had actually looked over his video surveillance, seeing that the night before, a woman that was unknown to her had come over, and this started a verbal argument. She attacked him. She threw wine at him. There are photos of all this. He defended himself, and then both of them together, as he's defending himself, fall over on a solid wood table, about 3 feet by 3 feet and about 2 feet from the floor, solid wood. She lands on her back, and that's the sole injury that's there. So everything calms down from there. They both clean up. She literally stays the night, and they are even intimate that night. She leaves the next morning. There's no evidence of any other injury, no photos, nothing. Just an injury to a specific place, completely corroborating what both of them would say, that this was an accident. Everything was okay in the relationship. 3 days later, my client, feeling that he needed a third-party witness, therapist, to inform her that this is officially over, decided to inform her at that moment, this is now over. We have to break up. This is not a good relationship. She flipped out, and then she began talking about a broken rib, saying things at work, and the story then began to evolve. 2 weeks after the incident, a Utah County sheriff investigated. Sergeant Gordon spoke to both of them. It's 2 weeks after. Both said that this was an accident, and he opined, even on the stand, that, hey, both of them seemed truthful. Both of them seemed honest. Like, I couldn't see it. See that, that either one of them was making something up. 3 days later, another agency began to investigate. They again talk with her. She says nothing about an attack or anything of the sort. But then the next day, this is October 3rd, 19 days now after the incident, both of them had decided that, well, let's have one more night together. She comes over. They're intimate. She's spending the night. And unfortunately for her, in a humiliating gesture, another girl comes over to the house. And she is irate. She's humiliated, she leaves with this girl, and now hours, just mere hours after this happens, she goes to the police and has this story about abuse and kicking and all of this. Between those days, that 19 days of the incident until her talking to the police about all this, dozens of phone calls, loving emails, many texts, no evidence of abuse. But my client was charged, booked into jail, and just to highlight everything I've been saying, she literally took a screenshot of the booking photo, of the booking image, and sent it to him in an effort to humiliate him. He was fired. And then multiple messages to other friends that she sent about how hurt she was by him cheating. She asked for a protective order. A judge, a neutral magistrate, found her not to be credible. And then we go through the whole court system on this for a long time. Everything gets delayed over and over again due to COVID. We go to trial. On the second day of trial, and the chaos and the emotion of all that, there was an offer of a plea in abeyance for this to eventually be dismissed in 18 months, which would be in November of next year, and something weighing everything that he decided to take. And what we're asking for here is a chance. You have a good man here who has gone through quite the episode, and what we're just asking for is some understanding. We understand that there's going to be a suspension, and probably quite a lengthy one. There needs to be, at least. But that's what we're asking for, is a suspension rather than a revocation. And my client would like to say a couple words.
Counsel, I appreciate everybody being here. I know your job is tough, hearing these cases and having to do a ruling on them. And I will accept any thing you guys come up with for whether it be revocation or suspension. I spent 13 years in the Army. I never had one disciplinary problem. When all this happened, my former first sergeant, who's a sergeant major now, called me and said, "You were not the problem. Like, I never had any problem with you. I had to take guys to the side and that I had problems with." As a law enforcement officer, I never had a use of force complaint. I actually never gotten even a fight because I was good at talking people down. In the academy, they taught us empathy. And I believed in that to the full ability, to the point where I had people that I would take to jail thank me for how much respect I showed them. I'm not that person that I was pegged out to be. I've never had a problem with domestic violence or... I'm pretty cool under pressure, actually. Being loyal, that's been my fault. And I've been seeing a therapist for the last year on trying to figure out why I'm not able to stay faithful in a relationship. So I appreciate your guys' time, and I hope the best for this. Thank you.
Mr. Kelly, I just had a question. Now, is it my understanding you pled guilty to a Class A on this?
Yes, sir.
Is there a reason that you pled guilty to that?
Yes, sir. During the trial, a lot of the evidence that we had to show that was all hearsay. The judge would allow lovey-dovey text messages that she would send, but when the emails that she sent were actually that were of threatening manners, they wouldn't allow in, and the prosecutor made sure that those weren't allowed in. So with that, I had to weigh the option of roll the dice and maybe go to jail or maybe found innocent. And it was a very scary situation. And I don't know if I did the best option for myself, but I had to weigh a lot. And my biggest thing was I didn't want to go to jail and I didn't want to miss any more time with my son because I've already had 6 months, 7 months of not seeing him because of the protective order.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Kelly or counsel?
There's a letter, Ms. Minner, thank you, I guess from Springville that was, I believe, here. In case there's any question about this, Mr. Kelly, this investigation of a it says here, the Springville Police Department hired him in August 2019. During his employment, it was brought to our attention that of the department administration that Officer Robert Adam Kelly was under investigation for domestic violence by the Spanish Fork Police Department. They don't show a timeline. The only time that he was aware of any investigation was during this process. So just wanted to make that clear.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any questions for counsel? Spooner, you have any follow-up?
I have no follow-up.
With that, we will go ahead and call for a motion.
Motion to accept.
I have a motion to accept from Colonel Rappage. Do I have a second?
A second.
I have a second from Spence Austin. Any further discussion? Hearing none, I'll go ahead and call for a vote. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion passes.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you, Mr. Kelly.
Louis Lombardo.
Mr. Lombardo, do you have counsel present today?
No, sir.
For the record, we'll show Mr. Lombardo you will be representing yourself. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Counsel, go ahead.
The agency involved is South Salt Lake PD. The offense is falsification of a government record, a Category D offense. Post-recommendation is a one-year suspension, and Mr. Lombardo submitted a waiver. He was on paid administrative leave from November 10th, 2020 to February 24th, 2021. He was terminated February 24th, 2021. Louis Lombardo was investigated by his agency for falsification or alteration of a government record. The investigation disclosed Lombardo had parked his department vehicle on the road outside of his girlfriend's home in Salt Lake City. Lombardo discovered his vehicle had been vandalized during the night. Lombardo reported to his supervisor that his vehicle had been vandalized at his home in West Jordan. Lombardo reported to the local agency that his vehicle was vandalized at his home in West Jordan, despite Lombardo's vehicle being damaged at his girlfriend's house in Salt Lake City. A few days after making a false police report, Lombardo contacted his administration and reported that he lied about where his vehicle had been vandalized. Lombardo was terminated and no criminal charges were filed. During a Garrity interview with Post, Lombardo admitted that he filed a police report and intentionally lied about the location of where his department-issued vehicle was damaged. Lombardo said he felt guilty about being dishonest and told his administration the truth a few days later. On September 9, 2021, Louis Lombardo waived his right to a hearing before an administrative law judge and stipulated to the facts as contained in the notice of agency action.
Any questions for counsel? Not. Mr. Lombardo, do you want you care to speak to counsel?
Yes, council members, thank you again all for being here. I understand, like everyone else, that your job is definitely difficult. I just want to say that a mistake was made. It was made under, you know, some mental duress on my part. That has been being worked on, and I'm only human. I made a mistake. The one thing that I credit myself for is I'm a man of integrity, and I come forward. Any mistakes I make, I correct, and I take full responsibility for those actions. And at that time, I took that responsibility as well. I understand that the recommendation is 1 year. I understand that I will not come out of this unscathed. I ask for a 6-month suspension because I know that it's not. It was my fault. It's not anything that I say that I didn't do. I wish I had my counsel here. Unfortunately, it's a full training day for her, but that's about all I have to say.
So, Mr. Lombardo, just for clarification, you were on paid administrative leave from 11-10 of 20 through 2-24 of 21. Is that correct?
That is correct, sir, yes.
So, and how long have you been on unpaid administrative leave? Is that after the 2-24 of 21?
Correct, sir. I was terminated.
Terminated. Gotcha.
Yes, I was terminated at the end of February.
Okay. Any questions?
So it was a policy violation for you to take your car to your the house you were at?
It was a policy violation that they sustained. The reason the car was at the home was I worked the next morning for my shift, and therefore that's why I had my vehicle there.
Any questions for Mr. Lombardo?
I have a question. Is when it would start to run? Is it from November of 2020? Is that when the 1 year would run?
It was,
So it would be from February.
February.
In the past, it's been from paid administrative leave.
It's not
the
county.
Yeah, the county.
Correct.
So when does it start to run?
I'm sorry. So it would be February 24th of 21 is when the typical time.
Okay.
For its termination date.
Correct.
So. Do we have?
Motion to accept post council recommendation.
We've got a motion to accept post-council recommendation. Do we have
a second?
The second from Mayor Walker. Any further discussion? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion passes. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Council.
Appreciate it.
Marcus Monson.
Do you have counsel here?
No.
For the record, Mr. Munson, do you have legal counsel present?
No.
Okay. We'll go ahead, counsel.
The agency involved is VEC. The offense is willfully falsifying any information to obtain certification, a Category C. Post recommendation is a 1.5-year suspension, and Mr. Monson waived any right to a hearing. Mr. Monson is still employed. Marcus Monson was investigated by Post for willfully falsifying any information to obtain certification. The investigation disclosed that on July 9th, 2021, Monson sent an email to Post claiming he had been dishonest when he completed and submitted his Post application in 2017 and did not document his marijuana use. Monson is still employed and there are no criminal or internal investigation. During a Garrity interview with Post, Monson admitted he had been dishonest and intentionally omitted his marijuana use from the Post application. Monson said he feared he would get fired from VEC if he disclosed marijuana use. Monson said he wants to be a patrol officer someday and needed to be honest about his mistakes. Monson said this is why he reported it to Post. On September 27, 2021, Monson waived his right to a hearing before an administrative law judge and stipulated to the facts as contained in the notice of agency action.
Would you like to go ahead and present to counsel?
Yeah, it was a mistake that's weighed on me pretty heavily. I was in 2017 when I was hired on part-time Unified Dispatch before it merged with VEC. Why I was dishonest about trying or smoking marijuana a handful of times. I thought I'd lose my job. Took it upon myself to be honest. I think I take a lot of pride in the fact that I was able to be honest and report myself for doing that. I do want to be a patrol officer, and if I can't hold myself accountable, then I shouldn't be a patrol officer. I appreciate the executive director for VEC being here, Scott Ruff, and supporting me.
Any questions for Mr. Monson?
Apparently we have a letter here also. You have it in your packet. You want to take a moment and read that? Let me see.
I would just like also to point out that there was a mitigator because he self-reported, and that's why it's the 1.5-year suspension.
Thank you. Any question for counsel? Did he get an opportunity to see the letter? Yeah, have you had an opportunity to view the letter, sir?
The letter from?
It's from Sergeant Barnett.
No, from Scott Ruff.
Sorry, Scott.
Yes, I have.
Counsel had a chance to review the letter. Any questions for Mr. Monson? With that, I'll go ahead and call for a motion.
I got a question
from Chief Swanson.
Excuse me. Since it's not a state law that all dispatchers be certified, it's not mandatory. Even if we suspend that, he can still be employed. Is that correct?
Yeah, it depends on the agency's policy.
Okay. Thank you.
Any further questions, or do we have a motion?
Motion to accept.
I have a motion from Mayor Walker to accept post recommendation. Do I have a second?
I would amend it.
I have an amended motion from Chief Swanson. Chief Swanson, go ahead with your amended motion.
I'd like to recommend a one-year suspension.
I have an amended motion from Chief Swanson for a one-year suspension and a second from Dr. Budd. Any further discussion? Hearing none, I'm going to go ahead and call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion passes. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Jeffrey Nelson.
For the record, Mr. Nelson is present and he has counsel present. Is that correct? All right. Counsel, would you like to proceed?
Jeffrey Nelson, the agency involved is Unified Police Department. The offense is allowing a vicious animal to go at large, a Category E offense. Post recommendation is a 6-month suspension. Mr. Nelson waived his right to a hearing. The agency action was 30 days of paid administrative leave, and he's still employed. The aggravators are there's multiple counts, and mitigators, there were multiple attempts to secure the yard. Jeffrey Nelson was investigated by a local county agency for allowing a vicious animal to go large on multiple occasions. Nelson was making attempts to secure his backyard and keep his dog from escaping. On two occasions, Nelson's dog escaped and bit three people while loose. Animal control investigated and cited Nelson for each incident. The case was screened with the county attorney and two counts of allowing a vicious animal to go at large were filed against Nelson, both Class B misdemeanors. Nelson entered a guilty plea to an amended charge of allowing a vicious animal to go at large as according to Utah Code Section 76-9-304, a Class C misdemeanor. The second count of allowing a vicious animal to go at large was dismissed as part of the plea deal. During Garrity interviews with his agency and post, Nelson admitted that his dog escaped his backyard on two separate occasions. Nelson also admitted that during those two occasions that his dog escaped, his dog bit three people. On August 24, 2021, Jeffrey Nelson waived his right to a hearing before an administrative law judge and stipulated to the facts contained in the notice of agency action.
Good morning. My name is Jonathan Thorne. I represent Officer Nelson, and he would like to give a quick statement, and I'll follow that up with a quick statement. So thank you.
Please.
Council members, thank you for being here, allowing me to be here today. So I joined the military back in 2008 as a critical care flight paramedic. During one of my tours in 2019, we had a dog that was on our base that got pregnant. Being one of the medical providers for the base, it was our job to deliver those dogs and make sure they were healthy. So we delivered those dogs, and I fell in love with them. So I adopted one of them and brought it home with me. And brought it home in March of 2020 and immediately got it training. Took it to Utah Canine Training in Sandy. Got it a whole bunch of, about $1,500 worth of training to make sure that the dog was good to have as a home animal. During that time, I was living in an apartment. I moved in with, I was my girlfriend at the time, my now wife. We moved into a house in Mill Creek into a rental property. The rental property was by Tanner Park, which for anybody that knows Tanner Park, it's most heavily trafficked dog park in Salt Lake City. It had a white picket fence, and my dog, being in the backyard, would get protective and dig out or try and climb a tree to get out. And every time that that happened or that I found evidence of that, I tried to address it. I tore down a tree that she had been climbing. I put up wood paneling underneath the fence. I put rocks underneath the fence. I even asked my landlord if I could pay out of my own money to build a fence that would make sure that this wouldn't happen. And he told us no. He liked the picket fence, and that was what it was going to stay. So through all this, her getting out, she hadn't bitten anybody at that point. This was September and October time frame she'd been getting out. So I addressed all those issues. I put a cone on her to make it so she couldn't dig out. From October to January, October 2020 to January 21, there were no issues with her getting out. She hadn't escaped. January 21, I was at work and got a call that my dog had gotten out and bitten somebody. For any of you that are dog owners, it's a call you never want to get. I felt horrible for the person. I tried to make sure that person was okay as one of my neighbors. I took responsibility for that. I feel horrible about it still. That's why I pled guilty to that charge, because I feel bad. And I'm sorry that my dog caused that issue. After that point, we started more training. Called the trainer back, started doing more training with her to make sure that she didn't do this again. During that time, she wasn't left unattended in the yard. She was taken to daycare every day so that there was no possibility of her getting out. And then the second incident where she bit two people, I had gone to work and left my dog home with my fiance, and the dog got left home with some of the other dogs. They decided they were going to go skiing that day. It was an impromptu thing, and the dog got left in the yard. It's my dog, and even though I had left it home with my fiance, I took responsibility for that because it's my dog, which is why I was issued that second citation. After that, we moved. We moved out of county, bought a house. I built up a fence that she can't get out. There's cement all the way underneath it. I have her in daycare when I'm not home, and I made sure that this house is somewhere that she can never get out of again. All I would ask of you guys is just please have sympathy. I'm sorry that my dog bit somebody. I feel horrible about it, but I love being a police officer. I don't want to lose my job. I love helping people. Thank you.
Mr. Nelson, were there any medicals on any of the people that were bit?
I don't know if there was any. I know the first person went to the hospital, and part of my plea deal was I had to pay any restitution, any out-of-pocket medical bills. They never submitted that to the court, so I didn't end up having to pay anything. So I don't know anything about what their medical bills were. Yes, sir.
Looks like you were on 30 days of paid leave. Correct. Is that because your agency did an internal investigation?
Correct, sir.
And what were their findings?
That first investigation in January when she first bit somebody, I was at work on an overtime shift in Taylorsville, and I left work to go get my citation. So the findings from that were I was derelict of duty because I had not told anybody that I was leaving. I went and got my citation and went back to work. But because I had not informed anybody in my command staff that I was going to leave my area, I was derelict of duty, and that was what that was for.
Administrative action against you.
So I had, it was 40 hours of unpaid leave that I had to take.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
So you actually had 40 hours of unpaid.
So the 30 days was the paid 30 days of admin leave that I was up for my IA investigation, sir. And then out of that investigation, I had unpaid leave that I had
for 40 hours.
I believe that's what it was, sir.
Okay.
To the best of my recollection.
All right.
So, total of 35.
Okay. Yes, that's my understanding.
Yep, I want to clarify that because the previous...
You want to bring that up?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Sorry.
Ask your question. No, go ahead.
You're not aware. So the question would be is we previously talked about the paid administrative leave. My understanding was if you're on administrative leave and unable to function as a police officer, that would count, correct?
So you remember, I think it was a couple years ago, we had this discussion again about when sanctions should start. I came up with some language, and it was voted on by the council to not exclude
paid administrative leave, because the discussion was that it should be left up to the departments to decide the scope of their authority while they're under leave. And we were not to the council at the time did not want to determine whether they're paid or unpaid. But the fact is that if they can't exercise the scope of authority, then the council decided that we can start from the date and include it in the sanction. But I can't think of a specific case where we have done that. We can do some research most definitely and determine that.
So what was the date of suspension?
I don't recall what the date of suspension was. It was back in March, but I've been past that, so I'm still currently employed and working as a police officer for the Unified Police Department.
Okay, do you remember the date you were put on the 30 days of paid leave?
I don't, sir. I don't remember what that date was. I think it was in March.
Council members, I would urge you to consider the mitigating factors. When the dog figured out how to climb a tree and jump over the fence, he cut the tree down. When the dog went under the fence, he put barriers under the fence. When the dog dug under that, he put rocks down. And when his landlord wouldn't let him spend his own money to build a fence, he bought a house and he literally poured concrete along the border of his property and then put the fence in so the dog could not ever get out. This is a dog that came from a war zone, came here when it was 7 months old. I mean, as you can imagine, that dog living in a war zone, and it was in Cabal. Very territorial. He spent thousands of dollars on training, spent $7,000 on the fence. This is an excellent officer. What you guys are deciding doesn't go to the merits of his ability to do his actual police work. As many of you know, a sheriff's star is handed out. You know, it's not something that's handed out lightly. It's for exemplary service. He received a sheriff's star last year. He's received one this year. In February of this year, he received Officer of the Month. And on Monday of this week, he was called before the Mill Creek City Council and again awarded the Officer of the Month. Under UPD's policy, if he is suspended under the current proposal, his job will be separated and he will be forced to reapply and start over. Because he's such an excellent officer, all of the mitigating factors, I would urge the council to please give him a letter of caution, allow him to continue serving the members of the community. Thank you.
Any further questions for council? With that, I'll go ahead and call for a motion.
We'll make a motion for a letter of caution.
I have a motion for a letter of caution from Chief Swanson, and I have a second from Spence Austin. And I got a substitute motion from Director Nelson.
Again, reviewed the elements of the statute. The reason we're here is because of vicious animal at large, 769304. I don't believe from any of the accounts I've seen that it meets the elements of the statute. I would make a motion we take no action.
I don't think we can go to take no action. The lowest level of action is a letter of no caution.
So would you make a substitute?
Okay, can I chime in? I've actually represented a similar John Ritchie before the council. He had a similar issue with a dog, and there was a proposal. I can't remember if it was a suspension, but the council ended up taking no action, as you've suggested, in this meeting, and that was accepted. And
my understanding that has since changed. Yeah, the statute changed. So based on the new statute, I have a motion. In order from
question.
Go ahead, sir.
Call for the questions.
If we go ahead and call for a vote, those in favor.
Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
Hearing none, the motion passes.
Thank you to all of you. I appreciate all of you.
Nelson was the substitute motion, withdrew his motion and made a new motion. Is that correct?
No, we're good.
Okay. We
good? Did you oppose the vote, though?
No, you did not oppose the vote, correct?
I'll agree with the vote. Thank you for the opportunity to donate.
Okay.
Thank for you. A letter of caution, correct?
For a letter of caution, correct. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
With that, we're going to go ahead and go into recess. We ask you to take about 10 minutes, grab lunch,
and then we'll come back and we'll proceed.